Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Jake from State Farm here, hanging out with Mel's Mow & Grow. Mel chose State Farm for small business insurance because his local agent is a small business owner, too. So she knew how to help him personalize his policies. And now, he's rolling in the green. Like a good neighbor. Guys, I'm trying to do the line.
Oh, sorry, Jake.
It's all good. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to an agent today.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big, we go all night, and here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. A lot to get into here on a Tuesday following the national championship game. I am still in Phoenix and joined by the Sporting Tribune's Grant Mona. Grant, how are you?
Doing good. It was just weird not having any NBA basketball, but now that is going to be the focus from here on out. But yeah, it was a great national championship.
Yeah. I mean, UConn just had this historic run, and we'll talk about this in the next segment with GA because, you know, obviously whenever a team wins back-to-back, it's only happened three times since that historic UCLA run back in the day with John Wooden. You had Duke winning in 91-92. You had Florida, I think, in like 06-07. And then now you have this UConn team. Here's my contention, Grant. I wanted to get your thoughts. I mean, it was historic. It'll go down as one of the more dominant teams. Again, their 150-point differential is the most in tournament history. Would have loved to see one close game. Certainly, that's what we thought we were going to get last night. Two best teams, two best big men, you know, obviously, which has been the case during this tournament. It was close for a half, and then it went sideways, and then you look up at the scoreboard, and UConn's up by like 16, and that one is done. Is that, I don't know, like, does a part of you enjoy the dominance, or do you just kind of tune it out? Because again, listen, like, when a game is basically done in the second half and a team's up by 16, like, I don't think you're going to keep the casual viewers.
Yeah. I think that, you know, every time we get to the March, you know, the tournament here in March Madness, we always want, you know, lead changes, close games, upsets, you know, we want that type of passion and energy because, you know, if you don't have those close games, it kind of feels like the, you know, conference tournament or a regular season game throughout the year. You know, what makes March so intense is just when there's five lead changes in a minute. Yeah. And there's, you know, there's fast breaks and there's upsets. And, you know, obviously the best team was UConn, right? There's no doubt about it. You know, they had a few games where it looked like, hey, maybe Illinois could get them. And then they just pulled away. Against Purdue, it just looked like they were the more dominant team. And I know Purdue has had a good run. They have great players. But UConn's defensive dominance and just their methodical offense, the coaching that Dan Hurley had those guys running. I mean, even after 2020, he said, hey, we're coming. We're coming the next few years. Yeah. And he was absolutely right. I mean, this program has, you know, I wouldn't say turned around, but just, you know, inserted themselves into the history books, honestly, with just how dominant their play was this whole tournament. there's maybe only two moments where I thought that UConn could probably lose a game, and anything after that was just pure 20-point leads or 25-point leads. So I don't know if this is maybe a model that a lot of other programs can use in terms of going huge down low with a good front court and then just kind of playing a methodical offense and like a grinded out defense. You know, I'm not sure if that's a model because it's worked the past 2 years. I mean, look at Purdue. They had a dominant big man in the front court that got them to the national championship. So while it would have been great to see a closer game, I just think that it just goes to show how dominant UConn was, because Purdue was also beaten up on a lot of teams as well. And Zach Edey, he had 37 and 10, but nobody else could get anything going. And that was what Dan Hurley said after the game, is that they just tried to take everyone else out of it. And maybe the Clippers should take a look at that with Luka when they play him in the playoffs. But they just said, hey, let Zach Edey get his, but we're going to make sure that everyone else does not get anything. And it worked. So all kudos to UConn.
100%. I mean, it was a great game plan where it was like, you know, we're going to let Zach Edey go off. I think he had 37 and 10 or something along those lines. And it didn't matter. I mean, Zach could have gone for more points than that. And they were going to allow him to have that night, stop the rest of his teammates, and they were going to win going away. Again, they are a blue blood right now, and it's not even close. I mean, when you look at what they've done during our time period, Grant, I mean, mine in terms of when I went to college, and you, since you've been a sports fan since 1999, they won six championships. That's the best by far. Yeah. It's not even close. And so really historical run by them. So give them kudos again. We'll kind of put that into historical context in the next segment when we're joined by Jihei again, big Duke fan, big Bobby Hurley fan, Dan's brother, who went back to back championships with Duke. And again, pretty amazing that you only have three teams since those UCLA run of seven straight that have won back-to-back, and it's Bobby Hurley point guarded Duke and Dan Hurley coached UConn. So incredible run by them. All right, switching gears, staying in Phoenix tonight, we have the Clippers playing a big game against the Suns. A big game for both teams. I mean, the Clippers more likely solidifying themselves as the four seed. Again, so important for them to at least have home court advantage for one round. We'll at least put them in a position where, regardless of the matchup, and it may be a matchup that they don't love, but if they can at least have home court where, you know, the first two games are at home, if there's a game seven, that game's at home. I mean, it just means so much. But then the Suns, you know, the Suns are fighting for their kind of play-in lives, for lack of a better word, if they're going to be six, seven, or the eight seed. Again, another big game for the Lakers as well. They have a home game against the Golden State Warriors. You know, can they find a way to move up again? And we've talked about them, the significance right now being the nine seed. You know, can they move up into that 7-8 seed where they're in a win and advance situation? And if they lose, at least they get to have one more shot at it. Let's focus on the Clippers Suns game again. Going into this game, you know, on Tuesday, the Clippers have a two-game lead on the Mavericks for the four seed. That is the 4-5 matchup right now. We've kind of talked about how tough that would be. But listen, when you're in that 4-5 matchup, it's going to be tough. Whether it's the Mavericks, whether it's the Suns, whether it's the Pelicans, it's not going to be a simple series. But again, you'd clearly rather have home court. For the Lakers, half game back of the eight seed, a game and a half. At this point, Grant, I don't want to concede it, but a game and a half back of the six-seeded Suns, a game and a half back of the Pelicans, I don't see that happening with just three games left. If they're at least in that eight seed, they're in that seven versus the eight seed matchup. All right, Clippers Suns. Let's start here. If Kawhi were to be out for the rest of the regular season, that would give him about 3 weeks, about 20 days from the last time he played till game one of the postseason. I don't know if that's the thought process there. I don't know if there's something more happening. Don't love the fact that he's not been playing. Your thoughts on Kawhi not playing, and more likely than not, Grant, not playing again during the regular season?
Yeah, I don't know if he will miss the rest of the regular season. There's really, you know, it's really clouded right now. The good thing, so let's go to the good news. So the good news is that they did an MRI and it was clean. A lot of Clipper reporters are saying that it's right knee inflammation, which just means swelling. And obviously, whenever you hear that, there's a lot of concern, but you know, if the MRI showed any damage, that would be a lot more concern. I think for the Clippers, if you can get him back in maybe one of the last two games just to, you know, get his conditioning in, just to see him get some work in before the playoffs, that would be ideal. Now, if they do decide to go the route of keeping him out the rest of the regular season, that would mean, like you said, 19 or 20 days in between games. And at that point, it just becomes like a regular injury. I mean, that's a 3-week thing where you can look at it and say, you know, why didn't you just tell us he would be out for the next 2 to 3 weeks? I mean, that would put a lot more Clipper fans at ease.
Quick, Grant, and I want you to touch on this. Sure. I don't know if this makes you feel good or bad. The most secretive and I say this complimentary, Kawhi loves it. I have not seen a team where there is no leaks. So yes, they could be open and say this is a 2 to 3 week thing. I've never seen a team not only not convey that, but there's not one leak in that building, not one leak with that team. So if this is more than a 2 to 3 week thing, we wouldn't know about it until the season was done.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that I'm surprised we even got the information that it was right knee inflammation. They would just say, hey, sore, and we're going to keep. But here's the thing, the reason why they had to do that is because after two sorenesses on the injured list, you have to give an actual diagnosis after that. So that's why they're saying inflammation. Now, for the Clippers, I think they still can win without Kawhi Leonard at this point, with the way Paul George is playing, with the way James Harden has kind of come on as of late. He was dealing with some right foot soreness, but I think that's just managing his minutes as well. Paul George played a high volume of minutes in that 26-point comeback win against the Cavaliers. But Paul George is playing as good as he did in December and January, and that's a huge sign going into the playoffs that you can count on Paul George to carry this team into that playoff scenario. Yeah. So, you know, it's not doom or gloom as opposed to years in the past where we didn't know last year that Paul George was even going to be back. We didn't know the year before. We knew the year before that Kawhi wasn't going to be there. So I think right now the team is being extremely cautious in terms of, hey, we know what kind of level Kawhi Leonard can get to in the playoffs. So if we can give him as much rest and give him as much energy and time off of his legs as possible, that's the best case scenario for us. So it's not doom or gloom as opposed to years past. I think it's just kind of a wait and see at this point.
With the Clippers, and again, we've talked about this in terms of who you would like to see, and there's pros and cons with each team, right? I mean, I think with the Pelicans, when we looked at them, it was one of those things where it was like just like a bad matchup. With the Mavericks, I mean, that would be a fun one, because like now we're talking about that as a rivalry. When you play each other in the postseason three times, I kind of think back to those Lob City Clippers versus the Memphis Grizzlies series. The Suns, again, that was a series a year ago. You got Kevin Durant and Michael Beasley and Devin Booker and just, I don't know. Well, is there, could you rank them right now? I hate to put you on the spot, but like from most favorable to not, I guess, of those three potential teams.
I think the most favorable would probably be either Phoenix, or I don't know if Sacramento can get up to the sixth spot, but I don't think that New Orleans can get there anymore. They've had a really rough stretch as of late. They're more in the play-in scenario, or the 6-7. They're four games back of the Clippers for that 4 seed. So I think the least favorable is obviously Dallas. They're 14-2 in their last 16. They have a top 10 defense in the past month and a half since the All-Star break. Their trade deadline acquisitions have looked fantastic. Luka looks like an MVP candidate. Kyrie Irving looks like the Cavaliers Kyrie Irving back in 2016. This is a team that, and this first round series, I'm gonna go back to the Lob City days, and Arash, when you covered the team, that 2015 series against the San Antonio Spurs.
Oh yeah,
it was a 4-5 matchup, much like this one. It was the defending champions of the Spurs. I know that nobody's a defending champion in this series, but it was the Spurs who a lot of people thought in that 4-5 seed was probably going to repeat. I know they had a kind of a bad year. But the Mavericks kind of resemble a little bit of what that Spurs team was, and the Clippers resemble a lot of what that Clippers team was. So there's a lot of resemblances that I see between that series and this series, where any two of these teams, if they get out of this first round, I could see them making a run to the finals. That's how good both of these teams are playing right now. And, you know, for Clipper fans, I know I'm looking around and I'm seeing, hey, how do we keep getting Luka in the playoffs? How do we keep getting this guy year in and year out? This is round three now, Arash, of that's probably going to be Clippers Mavs. I'm not going to say it's for sure thing, but it's looking like that. The Mavericks are a gauntlet. I think they can compete with anybody in this league, even the Denver Nuggets. So it's going to be probably one of the best first round series in NBA history. That's my prediction, just because of the star power and the talent on each side.
When people ask me about the highlight of my time covering the Lob City Clippers, I go back to that Spurs series where, again, the Spurs are the defending champions, a team with moxie, a team that's won, a team that's been there before, having a 3-2 series lead over the Clippers going to San Antonio, finding a way to win, extending the series and closing out the series. Chris Paul's kind of high watermark moment with the Clippers, the bank shot there. They go into the Houston Rockets series without Chris Paul. They find a way to win game one. They take a 3-1 series lead, and obviously we know what happens from there. But that stretch of time was when I was like, oh man, these guys have figured it out. So again, we'll would love to see the Clippers advance and figure out a way to have, you know, one last run. Again, by the way, the Intuit Dome does have their first opening act, opening up a lot earlier than I thought. Kudos to them. Like, if you ever fly over it, I mean, that thing basically is almost done. So August 15th. So August 15th, the Intuit Dome will be up and going again, well ahead of schedule. And when I say that, you know, I mean, it was just supposed to be done in time for the Clippers preseason, which will be October. So kudos to them for getting that done on time. Switching gears real quick before we head to break, the Lakers Warriors game, big home game for the Lakers. I think this is a must win game. I think they have to win these last three games if they hope to move up in the standings. Your thoughts on this matchup, Grant?
Yeah, the Warriors-Lakers matchups are always great games, so I expect this to be another one. This one's just a little bit more big in terms of what it can mean for implications. The Lakers' last loss was a little bit tough. You know, obviously they lost LeBron before the game due to flu-like symptoms, and then Anthony Davis during the game. That was a really disappointing loss because they had the lead. It was very reminiscent of when the last time the Lakers played the Warriors, when Anthony Davis went out in the first quarter and they had the lead, and then after that, they really couldn't get anything going. So we're going to see if Anthony Davis is 100%. We're going to see if he plays. We're going to see all this stuff. But for the Lakers, look, I mean, you're half a game out of that 8 seed. That is the main objective. And I know that the Kings are in front of you and they have the tiebreaker. But by any means, you got to get into that 7-8 because with the way the Warriors are playing, and we'll see it tonight, with the way they're playing, I do not want to face the Warriors in a playing scenario if I'm any team, let alone the Lakers. So as good as the Lakers have been playing, when you get into this elimination game scenario, it's really a toss-up, especially against a team that can shoot the ball very well. So tonight I'm expecting another close game. It may go to overtime. It may be down to the wire. That's just how all these Lakers-Warriors games go. But it's more for matchups. I'm really curious to see how they match up, what lineups are used, because we may see it another couple weeks, the same type of matchups, and we may see it at home at Crypto.com Arena, and we may see it at Chase Center if things kind of go downhill. But I think the Lakers will keep the home court advantage for the play-in. I don't know if they'll get the 6 seed. I'm not sure if they'll get the 7 seed. But to get into that 8, you know, the 8 scenario where you get 2 chances, that's ideal for them.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And really to do that and to put themselves in the best position to do that, they have to win their last three games of the season beginning tonight against the Warriors. Again, the 10 teams, and certainly the 4 for the play-in tournament, they are basically set. Not basically. I mean, Houston was on this kind of a great run and, you know, they're now 5 back. So they're not going to catch the Warriors again towards the end of the season. We do have a battle at the top of the Western Conference, the Timberwolves and the Nuggets. I mean, that's going to be a very interesting battle, because the Lakers, listen, at some point in time, if you want to win the West, I think you have to beat Denver. I don't think anyone will beat Denver this year in the West. But that being said, remember a year ago when the Lakers won that 7-8 matchup against the Timberwolves in advance, they got the number two seed. At that point, that was Memphis. That was the Memphis team that was going through a lot of stuff right now. You do not want to see Denver in the first round. Listen, you don't want to see Denver at any point in the playoffs, but if you can avoid them until the Western Conference Finals, as the Lakers did, things happen, right? I mean, the guys go down. They may miss a game or two. They may, not be available. Things happen. And so, you know, if you can just kind of extend that for as long as possible, that would be the best case scenario. Real quick, last question for you. What's a successful season for the Lakers and the Clippers? For the Clippers, do they have to get to the conference finals? Same with the Lakers. What's a successful season for these two teams, real quick?
Yeah, I think the Clippers, a successful season is the conference finals, especially with the team you put around with the December and January that they had. You just have to get to a conference final or else it's a fail. And that's just because you have contracts to sign next year. You have Harden and Paul George up for contracts. And we don't know, going into a new arena, you have to build up hype. For the Lakers, look, they've been a play-in team for a while now. So if you can get to a second round, even a conference final, that would be a huge win. Yeah. If it's a first round exit or a play-in exit, that is a huge fail, just because we saw this team when it was put together in the offseason that it could be a contender. And if they flame out before the second round or the conference finals, I just have to chalk it up to a fail, especially in one of LeBron's last years here. So kind of completely different mindsets for each. But yeah, I think conference final for the Clippers is probably where you want to get to as the baseline.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a great point. For the Lakers, I know, you know, listen, historically speaking for that franchise, it is championship or bust. That being said, if you've been in a play-in tournament situation for the majority of the season, and certainly that's where they're at right now, shoot, if you go on a run and you get to the conference finals, that is a success. That being said, if they fall short of that, to your point, Grant, if they lose in the first round, if they lose in the second round, if they don't at least get to where they got to a year ago, I don't know if Darvin Ham is back as a coach of this team. Thank you so much, Grant. Let's leave it there for now. When we come back, we'll be joined by G.A. Wiley to recap the Final Four. When we come back right here on the Mightier 1090 is with the California, the Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network.
We'll be right back with the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big, we go all night, and here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Welcome back to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. Just as a reminder, if you have a question or comment or want to win tickets to an upcoming game in Southern California, Las Vegas, or Hawaii, call our hotline 310-400-0340. All right, let's welcome back in from the Sporting Tribune, G.A. Wiley, to put this UConn run into context for us. As we touched on in the previous segment, there's only been three schools that have won back-to-back national championships since UCLA did it, in terms of winning six straight back in the day. 1967 and 1973, you had the 91-92 Duke, you had 2007 and 2008 Florida, and then this UConn team this season and last season. However, this run that they've been on, 140 points combined, point differential in the tournament, most in the last 30, 40, 50 years, again, surpassing 1996 Kentucky, which for my money was perhaps the best team I saw in person. Gee, put this UConn run into context. How historically great has this run been?
I mean, I'll say it. I said it before. I'll say it again. Dan Hurley is not coming. He is here. The UConn Huskies are not coming. They are here. Hurley is just, he's on a different level as far as coaching is concerned when it comes to college basketball. I think he actually said it when he was at Rhode Island. He's like, I need to change. Or no, when he first started coaching for UConn, he's like, I need to change my philosophy and I need to switch over my offense and make a complete 180. And man, did he ever do that 4 years ago. Or 3 years ago. It's incredible what he's done with this game. I mean, nobody on that roster, at least 4 out of 5 of those guys on that roster, none of them are under 6'5". And to have a point guard at any given moment that can be 6'6", that's hard to guard, right? I mean, yeah, you have Caravan at 6'9 on the wing. Yeah, you have Klingon at 7'2 down low. But man, to have a point guard that's 6'5", 6'6", it's a blessing, right? To be able to have that. I mean, how hard is that to guard? So again, guys, he is not coming. He is here. Now, as far as I heard a lot of people going three-peat. I'm like, let's pump the brakes on that one, right? But it's not far-fetched considering what he has on his bench right now. He has 6 or 7 freshmen on his bench right now. Let's see if they stay. Let's see if they leave, if they want to go and get, you know, maybe some more money, some actual playing time. But again, they're freshmen. This is very interesting, though, that now that I think about it, actually, that these freshmen are just automatically thinking they're going to play. Arash, you and I are from a time where freshmen didn't play. Freshmen sat that bench. They rode that pine for 2 years. So you might not see any, you know, playing surface for 2 years. Now, freshmen are just like, well, I should be starting. I should be playing. It's like, man, like, if you were around during the time when we were kids, when we were in college, you know, you'd be grateful to be a freshman and be a starter on your team. So I think maybe a little patience due to this NIL money, due to, you know, keep in mind, majority of these guys that are playing for a title are seniors, juniors, fifth-year seniors, super seniors. You know, we got Baycott coming back. I mean, it's incredible. They're playing for 6 years, you know? So I think everybody has to maybe chill and respect the culture that Dan Hurley has brought to the forefront, right? He's bringing in a culture where, like, maybe you actually want to stay. This might be like the Patriots, where your freshman year, your rookie season, you're used to winning, you know? You want to really go backwards and for playing time? I think I'd rather win a ring. I mean, maybe that's just me, but I'd rather win a ring and be in that winning culture that Dan Hurley has provided for UConn. So I'm looking forward to what he has in the forefront. Obviously, we're not going to know any of this until, you know, all of those guys either declare or don't declare for the draft, which should be coming up shortly. So that I'm looking forward to. I don't want to make any major predictions of the future of this UConn program, of this Connecticut program. But, you know, for now, I do want to say UConn, 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 UConn. I said it in the beginning of the year. I'm going to say it now. I mean, they are the favorite to win next season if they have this same roster back, if they have a similar roster back as well. Because Dan Hurley is, man, he's in the footsteps of his father. Right.
His father, historically great Hall of Fame high school coach, never did make the transition into college. But it was interesting. Dan Hurley at his post game press conference, having now won back to back national championships, basically saying, this is what my father would have done if my dad made the transition from high school to college. I mean, this is the type of coach he would have been. I am sort of a byproduct, or I am an extension of him. Bobby Hurley, again, one of the great college point guards of all time, has now become a head coach. It was interesting that Arizona State hosted this Final Four in Glendale. And so Bobby Hurley, you know, obviously has been here the entire time watching his brother win back-to-back. I mean, it's so amazing, Jihei, when you think about it, that only three schools have won back-to-back since UCLA's run. One was point guarded by Bobby Hurley. The other head coach, Danny Hurley. Put into context the Hurley family, again, from high school to college, just one of the great basketball families the sport has seen.
I mean, you said it right there, Arash. One of the greatest basketball families that we've ever seen. And we probably could have gotten something even greater, right, if Bobby Hurley didn't get hurt in that horrific accident. Back, I think, what was it his rookie year? I believe it was his rookie year that he got hurt, unfortunately, in a horrific car accident as he was coming back, unfortunately, not on the team bus, but came back individually to go meet up with the team for a game. That being said, this family, they give us gold every single year, not only when it comes to their father on the high school level, winning, state championships up until his retirement, Bobby playing for Duke and just dominating and being the reason why they went back to back. They would not be back to back champs if it wasn't for Bobby Hurley yelling and cursing out Christian Laettner. That's just the kind of leader that he is. That's the kind of leader I thought that he was going to be when he took over that ASU program, but we won't get into that. But that's obviously the kind of passion that you can see in Dan Hurley as well, as he got a warning during the game to pulled back in his little box, right? His coaching box. So I think, if anything, you can see that's the kind of passion that family has over in their genetics right there. And they're meant to coach. They're meant to coach, meant to be in this basketball community. That is how they're meant to be. Arash, I want to actually ask you, because I have yet to go to a Final Four, and I'm always very jealous to go to these every single year, living the Arash Markazi dream. But I was wondering, please let me know and set the scene for this Final Four in general, because we got NC State playing. We had, teams that had never been there before or haven't been there since the 80s. You have teams that I can only imagine the fan base. I was watching on social media the fan base of Connecticut, going off, in the stands. I can only imagine, the NC State fans just showing up and being so incredibly supportive. Alabama, they ride for their sports over there in Tuscaloosa. So can you set the scene for us, for me?
Yeah.
Because I'm really jealous of when you get to go every year.
No, and gee, I mean, I was really hoping Duke would be here because, again, just as you know, Duke historically travels well, clearly, for the tournament. No, it's one of my favorite events for a couple of reasons. Again, you have, like, every coach is in town. It is sort of a, the coaches' convention as well. So, when you stay at the hotel, so I'm at the hotel that I can say the name now because the Final Four is done. It was the Sheraton to downtown Phoenix. I think part of UConn or some of their, again, I know a lot of their alumni stayed here, but all the coaches stayed here. So you go to the lobby and the concierge lounge. And to be honest, I saw John Calipari here a few days ago and, kind of now looking back, perhaps negotiating his new contract. But you got current coaches, you got former coaches, but people are here from teams that did not make it. This is sort of their pilgrimage to enjoy college basketball. And then, again, a lot has been made over the past 25 years for the Final Four being in a football stadium. But the fact of the matter is, it sold out both games. It sold out the Final Four, two games, obviously, that night, and then the championship game, 75,000 each night, so a grand total of about 150,000 people, but it really kind of brings in the football tailgate side of it. Generally, that's something that you don't get for college basketball, but fans tailgate beforehand, they party like once the game is over, so it's a really fun time. I will say Phoenix, low-key, not a great big event city when you were talking about the stadium being in Glendale, for example. All the teams and the coaches and the media stayed in downtown Phoenix. That's if there's no traffic at least a half hour away. So it's a little bit further. When you talk about great Final Four towns, you're talking New Orleans, you're talking San Antonio, like Indianapolis, And so those are the towns where you kind of like come in, check into the hotel, and you're basically there. You know, you walk to dinner, you walk to the different hotels, you can walk to the stadium. But it has become one of my favorite events of the year. But yeah, definitely, GK, it's something you have to do at some point soon. And I was thinking for sure if Duke had made a run, which you were not even expecting this year, but if they found a way to make a run, that would have been fun. But GA, I wanted to get your thoughts on where we are with the big man. Again, last night was sort of a rare big man versus big man situation. You touched on it. Donovan Clingan is expected and projected to be a top five pick. Zach Keady, on the flip side, is projected to be a first round pick, but one of the final five picks in the draft. Why is the Donovan Clingan, you think, more suitable to play in the next level as opposed to Zach?
So if you look at, so first of all, and this is not a knock on Zach Edey, because I think Zach Edey is a phenomenal player considering the amount of experience that he has. Zach Edey didn't start playing basketball until his junior year of high school. So everybody has to take that into consideration that this sport's still brand new to him, right? Clingan, on the other hand, has probably been playing it since he was in diapers. So you have to take the difference in experience on both ends. That being said, the fact that Zach Edey has only been playing since his junior year of high school is phenomenal, right? And he's playing at such a high level at the collegiate level. I think that's one of the main reasons why he didn't get seen, right? He has that chip on his shoulder. He has that, you know, nobody was looking at me, but then Purdue gave me the phone call and I jumped, right? So I think he is a great student of the game. He's constantly trying to learn. But the same thing goes with Clingan, and Clingan learns quick. So Clingan's only a sophomore. We also have to take that into consideration. Clingan's only a sophomore. Edey, unfortunately, is further down the road, but Clingan is he learns very fast. I think on the NBA level, he's going to learn very fast. So you only need to give him maybe like a season to do what needs to be done on the NBA level, maybe two. Like, that's pushing it, but maybe two. And Edey needs a little bit more time, in my opinion. Clingan already has the basics down, right? He has his footwork down. He has the ability to hit from the outside. He has the ability to go, like, he has an NBA style center kind of play versus Edey is not there yet. So, and I'm not saying that Zach Edey couldn't get there. He just needs more time. And I think that's why he's lower on the draft board than Clingan's going to be.
When you look at the college game now, though, you know, a lot has been made about, you know, kind of like this tournament not being that exciting. And a lot of it obviously had to do with UConn having the run that they did in terms of these games not being close. The women's game having a far bigger TV draw. Is this a kind of a short-term thing? I mean, again, I think a lot of people, but by the way, you know, like as I was talking to other reporters, you know, are trying to figure out the future of collegiate sports. Obviously, the like amateurism part of it's gone. It's the transfer portal. I mean, that's the number one thing coaches talk about. That was the number one thing Dan Hurley talked about post-game. Now it begins. So it's not even the recruiting process. It's the transfer portal. And everyone on everyone's team is on a year-to-year contract. And once the season's done, the transfer portal begins, recruiting begins, and it's like, it's such a grind. And I think that's why you're seeing a lot of coaches out there, you know, really not liking that lifestyle of you know, but back in the day, you would get a recruiting class and like, you would be judged by like how that recruiting class did for the next 3 to 4 years. It's not the case anymore. You could have a number one recruiting class. They could be there for 1 year and then they're gone. Not even to the pros. They could just transfer to your in-conference rival. Like, you look at a guy like Kobe Johnson at USC, transfers to UCLA. So, I mean, what's your thoughts on, I guess, the future of college? And this isn't even just college hoops, right? It's like college football as well. But I guess just focusing it on specifically college hoops. So your thoughts on where the game is at now and where it's going to go.
This is my hope. So for us women, fashion recycles, you know, I think like every 10 years, fashion recycles. I think for the NCAA, for college basketball, I'm hoping fashion recycles and we get some super seniors. We get some juniors. We get some guys that stay. We get some guys that transfer too, and that's fine. But we get a lot of upperclassmen, right, playing. We get Connect, who's a senior, who went to three different schools. He went to a JC, and then he went to a four-year, and then he finally ended up at Tennessee and made the tournament. You know, we get stories like that. We get guys that are like, you know what, I wasn't happy here, so I'm going to go over here. And, you know, it fills the drama. It's fine. I hope we get some super seniors and we get, you know, guys that have been there before and know the assignment and know how to win chips. And we get a little bit more exciting basketball. Now, I'm also really hoping that the AAU programs, man, they got to get better. You just got to get better. It's really like you are seeing the product of the AAU transfer over to college and these kids haven't been taught fundamental things. Now they're athletic and that's awesome, but there's only so much that athleticism is going to get you and obtain you. Now I talk about fundamentals and that's why, you know, Klingon is higher in the draft board, on the draft board, right? You can see that kid's footwork. You can see him make that drop step. You can see him make that, you know, hook shot. You can see him make these different defensive plays where he's timing his blocks. He's timing, you know, where his where the guard is going to be, etc. It's not far-fetched. Like, it's just, I don't understand. Like, this is why the game, why nobody is sitting there being like, these are some stars. This is why Shaq couldn't name you, other than Zach Edey and maybe Donovan Klingon, Zach Edey couldn't name you two other guys on Purdue or on UConn. No, I can, because I've been following UConn all year. But not everybody can do that, because not everybody's going to be following college basketball the whole entire year. And I get that. And that's totally fine. Not everybody's a fan of it. It's not a big deal, but you know, the game needs to get better, and it gets better at a minute level. And this is the reason why, you know, you have a Canadian coming in to college basketball. You have a Frenchman coming in to college basketball. You have these guys that are dominating the game right now on both levels, on the collegiate and on the NBA level. Like, just like Dan Hurley said, they're here, man. We here. We're not like, this is a very unfortunate, like, we let, I don't want to say we let Europe catch up, but, you know, to a certain degree, we let them catch up and let them kind of dominate the game that we have dominated for generations. So I'm glad it's bringing up the competitive spirit. I'm hoping that it does that as well. But I'm really hoping that, you know, fashion recycles and we get some better basketball, because, man, we need it. We really, really need it.
Yeah, I mean, gee, it'll be so unique because we're about to come up on this time period where you know, when like LeBron retires and Steph Curry retires and this current class retires, and it's not just about what superstar will take over that baton and that mantle and become the face of the league. To your point, look at who the stars are right now, whether it's Giannis Antetokounmpo, Joel Embiid, Nikola Jokic, Luka Doncic. Like, you go down the list. These are not American players. It's not a bad thing, but I'm saying the best players in the world, yeah, you go through the top five, the majority of that list are international players. So it'll be a unique thing to track as we move along. All right, that's all the time we have for today. Let's do it again tomorrow. Until then, this is Arash Markanzi saying stay safe and stay healthy.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio. Hustle for the cash, so it's hard to knock it. Everybody got their own thing, currency chasing
worldwide through the hard times, worrying faces. Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.